high-speed rail is potentially the safest form of intercity transportation when you compare it to driving and airplane travel. Because in those places where high-speed rail operates on its own track, there has never been a fatal accident.
This is the Our Inheritance podcast, where we focus on stories about climate solutions. We explore different pathways to a future where we not only put less carbon into our atmosphere, but where we actually begin to draw down that amount to a level that is sustainable for all life on Earth. My name is Billy Dunlap, and in this episode, we'll explore high-speed rail as a climate change solution. In 1964, Japan inaugurated the world's first high-speed bullet train on the Osaka-Tokyo route, a distance of 247 miles. According to the International Union of Railways, there are more than 18,500 miles of high-speed rail lines worldwide. That number will increase by 50% when current construction is completed. Many more thousands of miles are planned and under consideration. High-speed rail is powered almost exclusively by electricity, not diesel. Compared to driving, flying, or riding conventional rail, it is the fastest way to travel between two points that are a few hundred miles apart, and also reduces carbon emissions up to 90%. Over time, its energy source is likely to get cleaner as renewables generate a greater share of electricity. High-speed rail is expensive and requires high ridership to break even. That is why only certain places in the world have sufficient population density to support high-speed rail. China has by far the most high-speed rail lines, more than 50% of the total. With Japan and Western Europe not far behind, where adequate density exists, high-speed rail can be an important component of sustainable transportation system and bring vitality to city centers. I decided to reach out to Daniel Crom, who is currently the director of MnDOT's Office of Passenger Rail. He took that position in June 15th of 2020. Before that, he served 4 years as the Dakota County Transit Manager. He began his career in 1990 working in the Office of Transit before moving on to the Office of Freight Railroads and Waterways and Government Relations. In his new position, Crom will lead Minnesota's efforts to establish and develop an interstate passenger rail program. Crom told me about some of the projects that they are currently working on, and I was curious, how is the environment impacted by these? When you're working on those projects, how often do you guys think of the environment, or how is the environment impacted, if it is at all, by working on these?
Well, passenger rail and rail in general is inherently environmentally friendly. I mean, you can move so much more product with so much less diesel emissions by train. And so as we do these projects, to develop a project, even though the train tracks are there, it's like building a highway. Mm-hmm. It takes years and years to do all the environmental planning, to do the assessment on neighborhoods and disparate communities of a road. The same applies to rail. We have to go through the NEPA, the National Environmental Protection Act process, to use federal funding. And also Minnesota has the Minnesota Environmental Protection Act, and we have to be in compliance with those regulations. So when it comes to doing these studies and project development, there's different layers of environmental need to be done.
Next, I spoke to Kevin Rogenbuck, who is the Senior Transportation Planner at Ramsey County Regional Railroad Authority. He was the transportation coordinator from 1994 to 2013. Mr. Rogenbuck told me about the Great River Rail.
The Great River Rail Commission is a joint powers board, and that means local governments got together and decided to form sort of a regional government for a specific purpose. Mm-hmm. And the Rail Commission, their purpose now is to get a second train implemented and running between Chicago and the Twin Cities, following the current route that the Empire Builder uses now from Chicago, Milwaukee, Wisconsin Dells, La Crosse, and into St. Paul. It's all Minnesota. It used to be the Minnesota High Speed Rail Commission when they were formed, I think, in 2009. And they've kind of morphed into away from high speed and just into, I think, what we say in our tagline, kind of faster and more frequent passenger rail service.
Finally, I spoke with Francis Loderell. Francis Loderell is the planning director for the Minnesota Department of Transportation. He is currently the project manager for the Northern Lights Express.
Northern Lights Express is not high-speed rail. All right.
Mm-hmm.
We use the definition intercity passenger rail to define passenger rail service that moves from one major city to another. And we use the term commuter rail to define passenger service that serves one city and comes from suburban and exurban areas into the city. So North Star is commuter rail because it doesn't go to another city. And Northern Lights Express would be intercity passenger rail because it goes between cities.
Mm-hmm.
And high-speed rail is, depending upon who you talk to, passenger rail that operates at speeds of at least 125 miles per hour.
Mm-hmm.
So, and in most countries, it operates faster. But Northern Lights Express is a proposed intercity passenger rail service that would operate between Minneapolis and Duluth. It would operate on the BNSF Railway Company's tracks that go between Minneapolis and Duluth. It would operate at up to 90 miles per hour. The average speed would be 60 miles per hour.
Mm-hmm.
That includes stops. It includes stops in Coon Rapids, Cambridge, Hinckley, and Superior. So it's higher speed than what we have today, but not true high-speed rail.
At the end of the day, high-speed rail is not as complicated to achieve as I once thought it was. High-speed rail would be a much more efficient and environmentally friendly way to travel the U.S. than flying or driving. Hopefully in the future we can all travel through high-speed rail. I'd like to thank the Blake School Environmental Science Program and Research Support Staff for helping source, cite, and fact-check this podcast. I'd also like to thank Britt Gangness at the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency and Mary Oldham Hanneman from the University of Minnesota Institute on the Environment for the interview support. I'd like to thank Daniel Crom, Kevin Rogenbuck, and Francis Loderell for taking time to talk to me about climate change solutions. If you enjoyed this podcast, please check out the others in our series. Thank you.